League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brew Fest in Katy. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
After you gave me all that grief yesterday, you're not doing it?
Oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah.
Has the moment passed, or should I still do it?
No, it hasn't passed.
All right, you ready? What up, H-Town? Hey, how you doing?
That's atrocious.
Oh, come on, it's better than your half-ass one,
Sean,
yesterday.
Sean, you tried. Like, I didn't try, very obviously.
I'm sorry, Jeremy, that I decided to give effort on this show. If you want to applaud non-effort, that's on you.
Sean, can you get that? And then we're going to use that in our car wreck of the day.
Okay, I'll grab that.
Cut that out.
Oh, man.
Thank you for pulling double duty today as well, Sean. It's very admirable of
the
you.
The trolling's already began.
No, I'm complimenting Sean. Not everything's about you, B-Mackers.
What was that, Brian?
I know.
He likes to point out when Sean does double duty, not when I do double duty.
You're at a brew fest. Like, you have nothing to complain about.
Yeah, okay.
You're at a brew fest. You have nothing to complain about. Sean has to sit up there on a Friday. The suits are probably gone already. It's 3 o'clock, so you know the suits upstairs are gone. Everybody's gone. He's probably lonely. We're out of the office today. Sean's probably the only person there, so he's lonely. He's pulling double duty on a Friday. Yeah, I have more admiration in this very moment for Sean than I do for you.
Than the guy doing a remote in the rainstorm?
Also, it is a pleasure to be on the air with me. It is a pleasure. I'm a delight. So it's a pleasure for you to be hosting the next 3 hours with me. As you can tell, no joke.
I will
today.
Agree with that part.
Oh, look, that's kind. That's very nice of you. Joel's gone today. Brian is in for Joel, and Sean is in for Brian, I suppose. But they are, or not all of them. Brian's at the Wild West Brewfest in Katy. It's a little rainy out there, you said?
Yeah, it's a little rainy. Luckily, we are inside the tent where they will hold the silent auction tonight at 8 o'clock.
Nice.
So the equipment is not in danger. Paul, though, just had to make the trek back to his car with no umbrella, so he got a little wet. But a little bit rainy, but it'll still be fun tonight out here at the launch party.
Yeah, Paul, is an athlete. So I'm sure he got there in
a quick pace. Oh, you think he sprinted back to the car?
It's possible, depending on the how heavy it's raining, yeah. Did you see him run? Did you watch his gait? Like, hey,
no,
it's great to see you, but I love to watch you walk away type of deal.
I don't have a direct eyesight to the parking lot, so I can't see how he made it back to his car. But, he was a former all-district safety, so I'm sure he got there with quite a bit of swiftness.
Taps six-man in Florida. It was tap 6A in Florida. Yeah, so let's give it the entire context here. But launch party tonight, starting at 7, runs till 10. Silent auction, like Brian mentioned, until 8 o'clock. There's going to be over 80 breweries, more than 500 beers, and then some live music. Because nothing makes you want a cold beer like live music. So if you like beer, who doesn't, get on out there to Typhoon, Texas and Katy. They are hosting the Wild West Brewfest. Tickets available, wildwestbrewfest.com. So take advantage of that. Astros started the Major League season yesterday, Brian. It's hard to believe that the regular season is already here. It is. I know we had spring training to get ready for it and all that. It feels like it got here fast to me. I don't know why,
see,
but it feels like it's here fast
to me. It didn't feel like that to me because maybe it was entire offseason of Altuve and left field talk made this offseason felt like it dragged a little bit. So it didn't feel fast to me, but I am certainly excited that we're here and talking about real games instead of what Jose Altuve did in games that don't count.
Also, doesn't it usually tip off like around April 1st? And I know we're close to April 1st, but March 27th feels early for domestic opening day.
Used to, but it's been last weekend in March, I think, for a good 5 years or so.
Okay. All right. What'd you think of the Astros win yesterday?
Don't fact check me.
It's okay. It's not.
Overall, I mean, obviously, I think the topic A here is with Fromber. Fromber was absolutely amazing. First inning was a little shaky, you know, if you want to be nitpicky. But Fromber looked absolutely like the ace in the Cy Young, you know, top three, top five guy that we've seen from him in the past. Offense, you know, had its moments, but overall, probably we'd all want more than three runs. I think the biggest maybe concern that probably came out of that game is the shakiness of Brian Abreu and Josh Hader. But overall, you get a win against a team that was, you know, obviously a playoff team last year, added to the lineup with Juan Soto, and you hold that team to one run. You can't take that as anything but a positive.
Yeah, it was a good victory. Like, hey, it's all well that ends well. Like, you win baseball games, you win series in baseball. That's what you do. You stack them all up. For me, like, the Fromber point, like, same old Fromber, like, cool. Like, that's the kind of Fromber that you want, getting ground balls, striking out guys when he needs to strike them out, doesn't get a lot of them anymore, but still is capable of doing it. I wonder what Fromber's mentals will be like this year relative to other years. Because this is his walk year. This is his final year of team control, enters free agency this offseason. Which have you, by the way, have you heard the term that they're using nowadays in baseball for
No.
a player? His final year, his walk year. Like, we've always known it as
it's
a
not
walk
a
year.
It's not a contract year.
Contract year has been something we've heard of it. You hear it in you hear it sometimes in football. Like, what is it? They use the prove it year. The proven contract.
There
in baseball, this is the first time that I've ever heard this, but I've seen it in multiple places, and I think people are trying to make it popular. They're calling it a platform year. Have you
no,
heard that before?
Heard that.
Platform year?
No.
I've seen it in multiple places.
Like, platform, like,
platform
to
year.
Me implies, yeah, like, platform to me implies, like, giving someone their first chance to show what they can do on a, like, on a stage, which wouldn't be obviously true with Fromber, who's obviously been, you know, an elite level pitcher for what, at least 3-4 years now. So yeah, I don't like the platform to me doesn't really fit for what I would describe as more of a contract year for Fromber.
Yeah, but they that's kind of the phrasing.
No, I
don't like
though.
Platform year. Yeah, it's multiple people have used it. I think I want to say McTaggart's used it. I know that Rome has used it, and I've heard other people say it too, or I've read it some places. Yeah, the platform. I don't love the platform year, but now that I said
all of you are gonna
hear these people or read these people say, yeah, platform year. But who cares? Like, whatever. But the question that I have is, what would you, let's say, prior to this season, that the Fromber that we've known and we've loved and we really admire how good he is and all that stuff. Fromber has been really good for the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years now. What would you say his mentals are, like, on a scale of 1 to 10? 1 being, like, cool, calm, and collected. 10 being, like, a psychopath that needs to see a therapist. Where would you put Fromber on that scale?
I would put it pretty close to the middle. So if 10 is psychopath, I'll put it at a 5. Like, he definitely has his moments. We saw it in the game 1 of the ALDS against the Twins a couple years ago, or Correa seemingly was leading the charge of getting in his head, and he obviously that always seems to manifest itself in him making fielding errors and throwing the ball, you know, into the stands. But it's not like it's an every game thing for him. He has moments that are memorable and they stand out. But I mean, this is a guy that, you know, a couple years ago in 2022 went through 26 straight quality starts. You're not going to get to that sort of, you know, and that accomplishment is, you know, take it for a grain of salt, whatever you feel quality starts are worth. But you're not going to get to that sort of accomplishment if you're constantly blowing up and having mental breakdowns every game.
Yeah, we do know that he has worked with a therapist, and, like, that therapist has traveled before in the past. I'm surprised you have it at a 5. Like, I would put it at a 7-3. That's how bipolar I think that Fromber is. Now, Fromber's, like, just really good. Like, Fromber, if you combine Fromber's numbers since 2020, so his age 26 year, the last 5 seasons, and then this year will be his 6th, the guy's 61-33 with a 3.10 ERA. Like, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Great.
Like that's that, great, that, yeah. that is a fact. But he can be a little volatile with his emotion. Sometimes he has to, you know, get yanked out of a game because he kind of loses his head. I would have it closer to like a 7-2. And maybe we should pull the hive here. 713-780-ESPN. Maybe it's a question for them. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being cool, calm, collected, cooler than the other side of the pillow, and 10 being a psychopath that needs to see a therapist every other day, being a 10, where would you have Fromber on that? What do we want to call this? The mental scale? Where would Fromber be on the mental scale?
The mental freak out scale? I don't know.
Let's go mental scale.
This sort of questions also, maybe this is why I'm lower than you, or I have them more towards the calm side. I think this is going to be kind of recency bias in the moment sort of thing, to where whatever you saw last from Fromber is going to be what side of that scale you grade him on. And what we saw him last, you know, yesterday was a dominant performance where he wasn't really ever pushed. So maybe you could say he wasn't ever put in a situation where he could blow up. There wasn't a defensive gaffe behind him that, you know, allowed an inning continue. He didn't have any defensive meltdowns where he had an error throwing the ball. So maybe that's kind of shading my reaction or my scale, my grade to this scale. But I don't see him as I see him as volatile, but I don't think it's as frequent as sometimes we think it is.
Okay, so the point that I'm trying to get to here, you have it at a 5, I have it at a 7-2.
Yeah.
We'll ask the Hive as well, 713-780-3776. Where do you have Fromber Valdez on the mental scale, 1 cooler than the other side of the pillow, 10 being a lunatic that needs a therapist every other day? But then does it change in his platform year? Like if you had him at a 5, I have him at a 7-2, where does it go down in a platform year? Does it go up in a platform year? That's the question I have, because the talk yesterday after he pitched a gym, you know, he was very good in yesterday's game, 7 shutout innings. After pitching a gym, the conversation after the game was, my goodness, Fromber in a walk year, platform year, prove it year, final year of his contract year is going to be phenomenal. Is that something that actually carries water? 713-780-ESPN will carry that on the other side. You can join in on the conversation. You're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers is not here today. Brian is at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. Busy show. Chancellor Johnson will be joining us a little bit later. Talk some Houston Cougar basketball. We'll be all over the Astros. We'll be all over the tournament. We'll be all over the Rockets. But how crazy is one Fromber Valdez? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from the Wild West Brewfest in Katy. Something that you need in your life if you're a business owner is HRP. It's pretty clear. It's pretty simple. It's pretty obvious. HRP, Human Resources and Payroll, Cougar owned by my colleague, Go Cougs. Chris Fisher over there, he's fantastic. He's an Aggie. And they have great people that work for them. Fantastic culture at HRP. They hire good people, and those people do good work. And if you're a business owner, you need to partner up with them. And let HRP help you. They can help you in HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. Doesn't matter. It could be one of those things, two of those things, all of those things. HRP is here to help you. There's no boxes with HRP. You're not reading off the menu. It doesn't matter how small or big the job. HRP is going to completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, a lot off your plate, HRP is going to find a way to help. They do it in a way that's unique too. Technology meets service. Best technology in the game, but their service is unique. Their service is unlike any other. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll always be talking to someone who knows your business needs. We use HRP here at Gal. They are fantastic to work with. Look, you want to spend more time in the areas of your business that you enjoy. You want to pass the buck on some of the areas of your business that you don't enjoy. We get it. Let HRP help you. Give them a call at 281-880-6525. Let them customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525, or check them out online at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brewfest in Katy. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Blankers today. It's B-Mackers in for Blankers. How come you're not on camera, B-Mack?
Because the camera stayed with the case that was with Joe George yesterday at East River 9.
Well, how was Paul on camera?
His laptop.
Oh, yeah, and you do the show without a laptop.
Yeah, yeah. According to you, I do it naked, but yes, that is,
you do.
That is what happened.
No laptop is doing a show naked in 2025. I pulled up the I was looking at the Twitch to see if the Twitchers had anything intelligent to say, and shocker, they did not. But it was very startling to see a full picture of me. Like that, I was like, that's too much Branham there. We need less Branham and more B-Mackers.
Well, Sean can go half and half with him, with you and him, if you want
half
less of
half.
You on the screen.
Something you put in coffee. 713-780-ESPN, Killer Bees Wild 2.1. West Brewfest in Katy. Texter, Branham, when is the last time the Cougs played in a football stadium? Unless I'm missing one, the last time they played in a football stadium was Lucas Oil Stadium back in the COVID year in 2021 when they went to the Final Four. They played Rutgers there in the second round. Big come from behind victory, beat Oregon State in the regional final to reach the Final Four, and then lost to Baylor in the national semifinals. They went 2-1 in Lucas Oil in 2021. I don't think they've played in a football stadium other than that. But the configuration's a little bit different this time around. Not really with the stands, although, because last time was the COVID year. There's more
right.
stands on the floor. They only play like in a third to a half of the football stadium. And then I saw that media row is like down low. The court's kind of elevated, like you see in the Final
yeah,
Four.
Yeah, it usually is, yeah.
Yeah, I've never called a game that way, so I'm kind of concerned.
Oh, you've never called a game being lower than the court?
No, never.
Okay, I just assumed with this Cougars run, you might have by now. What do you think of basketball overall? I mean, obviously specifically college basketball in NFL stadiums. Paul and I were talking about earlier today. It always feels like shooting struggles, at least for these teams that haven't played a whole lot of games. The NFL stadiums, the backdrop is so much different. Maybe the depth perception is messed with them. I know they get shoot around and practice time on the court before the game, but what do you think of the quality of play generally when you see these college basketball games in NFL stadiums?
I don't mind them in NFL stadiums. I think they should probably be reserved to the Final Four. Like, I'm a little surprised to see a Sweet 16 Elite Eight game in an NFL stadium. But I have no problem with them. I think at times, too, we overrate the shooting thing. Like, we see one bad shooting game in the Final Four, and it's like, oh, my goodness, it's the stadium. It's also the competition. Like, you're playing,
sure.
If it's in a Final Four, they're the best four teams remaining in the country. So maybe the defenses have something to do with it as well. I don't really have a problem with it. I don't have any problem
with
it. Really.
I think I might just have PTSD because I went to the, I think it was the 2011 Final Four, the VCU, Butler, Kentucky, and North Carolina year. But the offense in all three
Wasn't
of those
it UConn?
Games in that Final Four. Yeah, I'm sorry. I might have – yeah, Kentucky, UConn, Butler, and VCU. But the offense in all three of those games was just atrocious. And
what is the common denominator with those four teams? The common denominator with those four teams is they have elite defenses. So is it the elite defenses
certainly.
That are leading to the poor shooting, or is it the sight lines?
Yeah. It's sometimes I guess that would be a tough thing to figure out. You would need more of a sample size to – pick out the teams that aren't good defensively and do
right.
their opponents still struggle to be able to figure that out. And certainly VCU that year was very good defensively. So was UConn's always good defensively. The only guy that really shot well in that Final Four was Kimball Walker. But, I in general, I don't love it, but I understand it's big business.
Yeah, and like you're not playing, you know, these top 10 programs aren't playing directional state in NFL stadiums to skew the shooting percentages. Like, I think that the quality of team and quality of defenses skews the numbers to be like, oh my gosh, they can't shoot in an NFL stadium. No, they're probably just playing really good teams. I think that's more of the variable than NFL stadiums. Anyways, asking you the question about Fromber, 713-780-3776. Where is he on your scale of – I phrased it nicely, I think. You know, I didn't use the word psycho or anything like that.
well,
the mental scale.
Now.
Yeah, I mean, well, I said he's a lunatic. If he's a 10, he's a lunatic. But we didn't have Fromber at a 10. The text line, Astro fans don't deserve Fromber. He's one of the best left-handed pitchers in baseball. Quality start machine. He won us a ring in 22, and all people do is complain about him. I think that's a fair point. I do think that Fromber, in his greatness, and I do respect and appreciate his greatness, I do think that he is a bit underrated. I think locally he's probably rated closer, like more proportional. I think nationally he goes under the radar, and I really don't get it.
Oh, he definitely does.
The Astros have been very good for a long time. Why is he going under the radar when he's been their best starter over the golden era? Hilmer Verlander.
I think that's a ground ball pitcher thing. I mean, it's kind of the pitching equivalent of Chicks Dig the Long Ball, as we think strikeouts are sexy. And not that he doesn't get strikeouts. I mean, he had a season a couple years ago where he was over 200. But he's not a guy with the super high K per nine rate usually, because he lives on getting ground ball outs. And I think that is just going to, you know, the Paul Skeens going up there and striking out 12 in five innings is going to grab more of the attention than Fromber going, you know, seven shutout, getting a bunch of ground balls and only four strikeouts.
713-780-ESPN. I give him a four, but more importantly, he's been available and seldom out due to injury. He's a workhorse. Six, he's got shakiness you don't want from an ace that will command top dollar. Next. I feel like this guy's underrating Fromber
a
little
aggressive.
Bit. Well, I think it's fair to say not to pay Fromber, because I would be on that side.
Sure.
Like, I'm not paying Fromber about it. Right, but I think that's what he's trying to say, the texter. And, like, 6 isn't that high on the scale. The mental scale, 1 to 10, 6 is not crazy.
Okay.
I mean, I had him at a 7.2. Maybe his phrasing makes it sound a little bit harsher. But, like, I mean, I have it at a 7.2. I have it higher than the texter. And I also would not pay Fromber Valdez. So I'm probably being a little harsher than that texter is. Texter, instead of losing him to free agency, is there any chance at all they trade Fromber even if they're in contention? Okay. I've seen multiple people say this. I've seen writers say this. This is something that I find to be very dumb. And I am always in favor of trading a player that's about to leave you in free agency. Like, I'm a proponent of that. I wanted to trade Kyle Tucker in the offseason. I wanted to trade Fromber in the offseason if the deal made sense. I wanted to trade Bregman. I wanted to trade Correa. I wanted to trade Springer. Like, I'm a huge advocate of trading a player before they leave for a compensation pick. So, usually I'm on that side. You just don't do that in the middle of the year with your ace. Like, if you're in contention and you trade your ace, well, you've lost the clubhouse. You've lost everybody in that clubhouse. So, I am not in favor of doing it in season. I think the Astros tried to do it in the offseason but didn't like what the offers they got presented. So, no. There is not any chance at all that they trade him if they're in contention. Now, if they're out of contention, much different story, and they better trade him.
Yeah, no, completely agree. I was definitely a proponent of trading Fromber during the offseason. In fact, I would probably lean to the side of the Astros made a mistake not trading him, with, of course, the unknown of being what the offer was. So there's definitely some grace there that I'll allow the Astros front office. But you can't trade him in the middle of the season if you're contention. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, remember how upset the team got in 2017 when the initial trade deadline passed and didn't make the big move? I think Dallas Keuchel, maybe George Springer, spoke vocally about, you know, wanting to see that the front office behind them in this push. And eventually they make the now extinct end of August trade deadline to move to get Justin Verlander, and we know what happened after that. But what message? I mean, you trade for, you know, I mean, not trade for, you sign Christian Walker, you get, you know, Isak Paredes here, you've got other veterans on the team. What sort of message is that sent to them that you're in contention? You're a team that has had a crazy amount of success going back to 2015, and we know how much of a crapshoot the baseball playoffs are. You get in, anything can happen, and you take your ace when you're in contention, and you just trade them? Like, the time to move them was in the offseason. I think now the only way you move them is if the team falls apart and is not in contention.
Texture says 6.5 on the mental scale. Fake Tony Stark here. Anyone who uses the phrase platform is a 10 on that scale. Yeah, I don't like the platform year.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of that. I like to call it the walk year. Fromber has won the most games in the last 5 years out of MLB pitchers. Yeah, he's really good. Fromber's definitely a top Cy Young candidate, best quality pitcher in baseball. He's in the conversation. Love me some Fromber. Texter, it's crazy how we talk bad about the Astros, and they've won 7 ALSs. Been to a few World Series, and we still talk bad on ESPN. Can we have a brighter future on our positive mindset on them Astros, please? I feel like I'm pretty optimistic about the Astros.
I feel like I talk about
them glowingly.
I don't know what we said bad about them.
Maybe
at least,
he means,
I mean, at least
a
national
perspective. I mean, we're critical of them whenever they deserve to have criticism.
Sure, but we're not just routinely crushing them.
No, I mean, my outlook on the Astros is overwhelmingly positive. Like, this is the best era of a Big Three Houston pro team, arguably ever. It would be in the top
two. No, I don't
think
it's arguable.
I mean, you have the Rockets runs in the mid-90s. Like, that, it would be Rockets runs, mid-90s, Astros golden era. Those are clearly the top two, and
sure.
I could make a case for either one of them.
Yeah, I would lean Astros because, to me, the Rockets was shorter by a few years. I mean, really it went 93 to 97 once you get past that, like when Scottie Pippen came to town. I know they were still making the playoffs, but the run was pretty much over. The year before they won the title, got knocked out by the Sonics, obviously, in the second round. I guess if you want to include that, you can add on a year to it. But I would definitely go Astros 1 if we're talking about best eras in Houston sports.
I would, too. But those are the clear top two. And
absolutely.
Everything else is – I mean, there is nothing else that can even be discussed.
No, nowhere nothing else close. In consideration.
All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. So where we have Fromber on this Looney scale, does it change in his walk year, good or bad? 713-780-3776, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew –
listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brew Fest in Katy.
So Fromber Valdez, in his walk year, he could make millions, he could lose millions, depending on his performance, health, all of that. So the Looney scale for Fromber, you're at a 5, I'm at a 7.2. We went through a few of the textures there. I put it on Twitter as well, at Jeremy Branham. On Twitter, at Jeremy J. Branham on TikTok, if you want the video version. Do you think it's going to be better or worse, his lunacy, in his walk year?
I tend to be – this feels like a conversation we had, you know, a while back with Stephon Diggs after the Texans traded for him, because we know, you know, he forced his way out of Minnesota. We all saw the videos of him being unhappy on the sidelines with the Buffalo Bills, yelling at Josh Allen, yelling at, I guess, with anyone within anyone that could hear him. And we had that conversation of, look, he's the guy that's coming here. The Texans restructure his contract, so now it's a one-year, you know, prove-it deal, or as baseball nerds will call it, a platform year. And he's got to show that he could be a good teammate and not be crazy on the sidelines, because he's getting older and he's still trying to get that last contract. So I tend to believe, not that Fromber and Stephon Diggs and personality are really all that close, but I tend to believe a guy like Fromber, who has at least enough, you know, self-awareness to hire a therapist to work on this issue, has to know that in this walk year, this contract year, that he's got to be the best version of himself. So I think that tends to lead him down a path where he's more in control and less likely to have the meltdowns that have had us nervous at times.
See, I think he's going to improve too, like with the mental game. Like, does it yeah. back up his numbers? I don't know. Like, it might not at all. It might just be traditional Fromber year. But I think he's going to be locked in. Like, I think he's
–
like, sure, he's going to have moments. But I think overall this season, year older, knows that he's pitching for millions. I think he's going to step up to the occasion. I'm with you. I think it's going to be something that gets him dialed in for the year, which is pretty scary. Like, not from an Astros point of view, but, like,
sure,
it's,
for the
like
opponents,
it's exciting
yeah.
for what it could look like this season for Fromber. Like, is this a year where maybe he can win an AL Cy Young as opposed to being top three, top five, top seven? I think he's capable. He is capable, and he's been really good over these last five seasons. Ocho on the text line asking us, why did the Astros pitch to Juan Soto in the ninth with two outs instead of walking him and pitching to a lesser player? That was the highest level of stupid, says Ocho. I wouldn't pitch to Soto on Hader's best day, let alone a struggling one like last night. Well, you do have Pete Alonso on deck. Alonso's not Soto, but Alonso is not chopped liver. And he's also a righty against the lefty. Soto, lefty bat, lefty pitcher. They probably like the matchup there. And then also, if you do intentionally walk Soto, now you put the tying run at second base and the go-ahead run at first base, as opposed to the tying run at first in the go-ahead run at the box. I have no problem pitching to Juan Soto there, Brian.
Yeah, I didn't either. Like you mentioned, you're moving runners up if you do walk them. And if you do walk them, you're going to then have to pitch to a guy with arguably more home run power than anyone in the league with the polar bear, Pete Alonso. So, I mean, at some point you have to trust your $90 million-plus closer to get guys out. I mean, that's why you don't pay a guy the highest annual, you know, contract to then walk Juan Soto. Like, I get the – I mean, if the bases are empty, I totally get it. Yeah, put him on. He's the best hitter on their team. But in that situation, I agree with going after him.
The Mets broadcast did mention something in the eighth inning. They said they were surprised a spotter didn't bring Hader in to face Brandon Nimmo, a lefty, with two outs, bases loaded in the eighth after Brian Abreu walked the bases loaded. A couple of close pitches. I thought he was getting squeezed a little bit. Their thought there is you bring in Hader to face a tough lefty, you know, with two outs. I think what a spot is doing here, though, is he's preserving Josh Hader. Like, he's been pretty vocal in spring training that he does not want to use Brian Abreu and Josh Hader for more than three outs. And I think that this was a perfect example of him being pretty staunch on that belief. Like, hey, I'm going to be strict with this. Last year, the season got away from him early, and they didn't really have a choice. Like, they were playing catch up, and they were playing uphill the rest of the way. I think yesterday was a pretty good example of, like, yeah, Hader's available and Hader's healthy. This is the first game of the season. They took care of him in spring training. He could certainly get you four outs if you absolutely needed, but I think Hader not being used in the eighth against a tough lefty shows that Joe Espada is putting action to his words, that he does not want to use Hader and Abreu for more than three outs in a game, which early in the year, and if you get a lead in the AL West, I completely agree with. Like, I don't need those guys to go four outs during the regular season. Now, if it's late in the year and these games are, you know, magnified and critical, okay, change the mindset there. Playoff, change your mindset. But game one of 162, I agree with Espada again.
Yeah, I like him using a little bit of restraint there because I think it would be easy to just go ahead and throw your hammer in and just go for it. And we saw a spot, I think, do that at times last year. But this bullpen isn't as deep as it's been. I mean, it's we know that some of the arms are there is very talented. But obviously losing Presley, they're not really adding anyone in the offseason. I don't think they can afford to be as aggressive with their bullpen as they were last year, which, like you said, Joe Espada openly admitted was a mistake. So, and I think the other part of it, look, I know Brian Abreu had just walked the bases loaded, so this may sound a little bit crazy, but I mean, we saw Josh Hader's ERA jump up, you know, 2.5 runs from his last season in San Diego to last season. We saw him, you know, obviously have a lot of trouble last night. I think Brian Abreu is just as capable of getting that out as Josh Hader, so I don't see what the advantage there is, unless there's
a lefty. It's a lefty.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. So unless the splits on one versus the other, you know, tell a tale that's worth making the move for, then I would understand that. But otherwise, I mean, Brian Abreu was more effective than Josh Hader was last year, so I would not be in favor of taxing Hader more than I had to.
Yeah, I'm okay with them being one-inning guys for now, and really for a majority of the year.
Like you said,
if you build a lead all year,
changes everything. September in a play in a division race, that's different. But game one,
especially with the state of the bullpen, like you can't. Those guys got to be good. Which brings me to my point. Like, you know, you were fine yesterday. You won 3-1. Like, it was a little stressful, but like that's baseball, nature of the business.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want Abreu to walk three guys and load the bases. You don't want to bring Juan Soto to the plate as the go ahead run. Like, Abreu and Hader didn't have their best outings. You still won, so like it's, you know, it's easier to teach from a winning place because you won the game, or at least a happier place. So, like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, criticize them, like, so much. Like, game one of 162, you still won the game. Like, I still believe in Brian Abreu. I still think that Josh Hader is going to be fine. I will say this, though. With the state of their bullpen, those two guys have to be good. Like, Brian Abreu has to continue being the Brian Abreu that he has become. Josh Hader needs to revert back to the old Josh Hader. I don't even think they can live with him being who he was last year. So with the state of this bullpen and a bunch of, you know, guys that, you know, are not that proven, Taylor Scott career year last year, and then guys behind him that are kind of journeyman relievers, Rafael Montero, who you DFA'd, and he accepted the assignment, and you bring him back.
Yeah,
so with the state of the bullpen, and I'm not saying the bullpen's going to be bad. I think it has a chance to be fine to okay to pretty good. Now, you need a lot of things to work in your favor. But if one of those guys is bad between Abreu and Hader, I don't think this bullpen has a chance to be good.
Yeah, that's a good point because, and like I was mentioning earlier, like the depth of the bullpen, especially while, you know, guys like Caleb Ort's out, you know, I mean, Forrest Whitley's a complete unknown. He's, what, got two-thirds of an inning at the major league level in his career. But that was a guy that we talked about the Astros probably depending on for a good part of the season. And he's obviously not available right now. So, I mean, I like Taylor Scott, but like you said, career year, was that the fluke year? Was that the Rafael Montero 2022? Or is that actually who he is? Yeah, you can't run Abreu and Josh Hader into the ground because there's not really a lot of guys after him that could step up if one of those guys goes down. I mean, I like Brian King, but he's, like you said, journeyman. Caleb Ort's not available right now, but he showed pretty good stuff. It definitely can throw some heat, but he only pitched, like 30 innings last year, so still kind of an unknown there. Yeah, this is not a situation where you can, I really think, over-push and overextend Josh Hader and Brian Abreu.
Yeah, my point was more of an additional point. Like, that's 100% true. You can't overextend those guys. You need them, like, pretty strong. You don't want to empty their tank or having pitching on fumes all year long. My point is even if you do handle them right and manage them right, they both have to perform well with the state of this bullpen. Like, you can live with this bullpen that you have. I firmly believe you can live with this bullpen that you have. But Abreu has to be Abreu, and Hader has to revert back to being Josh Hader. If both of those guys don't do that, I don't think this bullpen has a chance to be above average even. So it's critical that they're good. Texter, walking Soto would have put the tying run on second. These fans got to get it together. Yeah, Ocho, get it together. Get it together, Och. Texter was game one of the regular season in a home opener. Strut your stuff and test your mettle. I think that was to Hader facing Soto for the final out of the game. All right, 713-780-3776. I do want to touch on a couple of other things from this game yesterday. How about the corner outfielders? What did you make of Altuve's first regular season game in left, Cam Smith's first regular season game in right, and also Twitter admin for the Astros again has zero fill. Zero fill. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from the Wild West Brewfest in Katy on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brewfest in Katy.
80 breweries, more than 500 beers, live music, and nothing makes you want to drink cold beer like live music. Launch party tonight, 7 to 10, silent auction at 8. You can also purchase pre-purchase drink tickets, and you get your tickets at wildwestbrewfest.com. Typhoon, Texas, and Katy, the Wild West Brewfest tomorrow, but launch party tonight, silent auction tonight as well. 713-780-ESPN. We'll be joined by Chancellor Johnson, talk a little Cougar basketball. Coming up at the top of the hour, Houston and Purdue in Sweet 16 action. We'll talk some Sweet 16 a little bit later in the program as well. Four interesting games yesterday. The last two got pretty dicey. We'll discuss a little bit later. Texter, I do feel like this team is Dana and Espada's and not Crane, Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, says Keith. I would agree with that. What do you feel about that, Brian?
Sorry, I got a little distracted out here at the Wild West Brewfest. Repeat that question to me.
Man.
I know.
Not a great look.
I know.
And if you had a computer, you could pull up the text line, too.
I know. There's a lot of great items out here for the silent auction. Starts at 8 o'clock tonight. There's a lot of things to look at. I got a little distracted.
Trying to dig himself out of a hole. I feel like this.
Did it work?
I do feel like this team is Dana and Espada's and not Crane, Bagwell, and Reggie Jackson, says Keith.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think the – I mean, obviously, Reggie Jackson's not even with the – club anymore, and it seems like from everything we hear and see that Bagwell's influence is at least less than it used to be. So yeah, I would definitely say this team has more of a the thumbprint of Dana Brown than it has in years past.
Texter, sorry about that. Are you going to mention the Houston Roughnecks home opener tonight? Yep, Houston Roughnecks home opener tonight, TD ECU Stadium. Get on out there. Ocho's mad at the Texter that's mad at him. There you go. Pete Alonso ain't hitting bloop singles, says Ocho. I'm sorry, but there's a huge difference between Soto and Alonso, so walking Soto would be the best move, exclamation mark. If either gets a hit, it's likely to score multiple runs, no matter where the runners are. So that's not true. And the Astros are playing no double defense, so Soto would probably have to hit the ball over the wall for the runner to score from first.
I think Alonso literally had a single in that game already. So
walk Soto and deal with the lesser player. All capital letters, y'all get it together, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Texture, you've triggered Ocho. You've triggered Ocho on the text line, 713-780-ESPN. Speaking of the outfield, here's a hot take, cash it or trash it. Cash it or trash it. Jose Altuve is a better left fielder than Cam Smith is a right fielder right now.
Well, I guess if we're only basing it off one game, I will cash it. Although, obviously, the moment where he nearly hit sticks Jake Meyers was a little bit worrisome. But yeah, I mean, no glaring blunders or errors from Jose Altuve. And look, I think maybe too much is being made of the Cam Smith slide that didn't turn into a catch, turned as what would have been a single into a double, put a guy on second base. But that was probably a play I'd only want him to make if it was like trying to prevent the winning runs at third or whatever. At that point, with a 3-run lead, just, you know, let it fall in front of you. Don't let a guy get into scoring position and go to the next at bat. But I don't want to kill him for it. It was one play.
I'm not going to kill him for it. It's just that I think Altuve is a little bit ahead of Cam Smith defensively. And it's a less important defensive position, left and right. But, I mean, you're obviously not switching them because Cam Smith has the arm and Altuve does not. I just think Altuve is a little ahead of him right now. Now, I do think both are below average defensively. Did you catch what Jose Altuve said? The Altuve, the greatest Astro of all time that cries wolf. Altuve likes to exaggerate a little bit. He likes to exaggerate a little bit, I've learned. Altuve yesterday on the ovation that he got going to left field, I don't know if you caught it, but whenever he went to left field at the dike, the fans in the Crawford boxes, hey, yeah, you're our new left fielder, yeah, we love you. Altuve, after the game on the ovation, said it was one of the happiest moments of his life. Do you really believe that? Do you really believe that?
No.
Jose Altuve going to left field yesterday and getting the ovation from the fans at the dike, do you really, really think that was one of the happiest moments in his life?
Look, this is a judgment-free zone, and it is 2025, so he is free to identify however he wants to identify. If he wants to identify as a left fielder, then, you know, that's his choice. But no, I mean, he's won two World Series. He's won an MVP. He's obviously been in the playoffs a gajillion times. He's got kids. He's married. There's a 100 other moments that should rank above running out to left field.
How many kids does Jose Altuve have?
I think two, right?
Let's see. What does Grok tell us? He has two daughters. So he's married. So do we think that the ovation left field was a better moment than him getting married?
I don't know. Like, apparently not to Jose. I mean,
what
maybe
do you
the
think?
Wife's going to have words. I will say yes. Getting married was a bigger moment.
Okay, so that's one. Do you think the birth of his first daughter was a greater moment?
Yes, I do.
Two. Do you think the birth of his second daughter was a greater moment?
No, he's over it by then.
Okay, two and a half. I'm going to go yes. So 2.5. We'll go a half one on that one. How about the walk-off homer against Aroldis Chapman?
That was a better moment.
3.5. How about winning his first World Series?
Better moment, yeah.
4.5. How about winning his second World Series?
Same.
5.5. How about his first career big league hit?
Yeah, probably.
6.5. How about his 1,000th big league hit?
Yes.
How about his 2,000th big league hit?
Yes.
How about 100 other moments?
How about professionally? How about his 3-run homer against the Rangers in Game 5?
Of Charles Leclerc,
the
F1 driver.
Exactly, the F1 driver, yes, exactly.
He's had 100 greater moments than that. And Jose Altuve yesterday after the game said it was one of the happiest moments of my life. Sorry, Jose. Yes, you're the greatest Astro of all time. Yes, you're one of the top five greatest offensive second basemen all time, although moving to left field might hurt you in that conversation. But I call your bluff, Jose. I call your bluff. I'm going to go out
That's
on a
bold.
Limb here and say that that was not even one of the top 100 moments of your life.
That's bold. That's a bold claim. Let's not leave out the 2017 NLDS against the Red Sox. We hit 3 home runs in Game 1, including, I believe, 2 off of Chris Sale. So we could chalk that one up there as another moment on there.
Yeah, though. Yeah, this is Altuve though. It's, I mean, I'm not. It's fine. You can be an exaggerator,
this,
but I mean, I'm just.
This feels like you're
that.
Trying to come back to claim victory on something that happened.
I'm not claiming victory. No, I'm just pointing out another example that Jose Altuve likes to exaggerate a little bit. And
Maybe we'll get another promo from Lance that calls you stupid as crap.
Everybody has their personality traits. Everybody has their personality traits. Like, you're kind. You're hardworking. Sean does really good with GameStop stock. Like, we all have our little tendencies, right? We all have our things that make us tick, that make us – like, for me, I'm very handsome and, you know, I have a chiseled body. Like, we all have our things.
Right.
Jose Altuve's thing is that he exaggerates a little bit. It's okay. We're just calling a spade. We don't like Altuve less. We still literally love Jose Altuve. He's still the greatest Astro of all time. Just because I'm saying he exaggerates a little doesn't mean I'm putting down the little man. I still think he – I mean, I think the world
like
of Jose Altuve. But he exaggerates
like
a little.
I feel like putting the term little man in while you're trying to praise him is there fact making
he's
fun
5'5". It's just a factual statement.
Yeah, I know. It's a factual statement. Jose Altuve likes to do two things. He likes to
Jose who?
He likes to get Jose Altuve. If I could get his name out,
it's the wrong value used there at the beginning of his name.
Yeah. I am a Greco. But he likes to exaggerate, and he likes to get cut off of a base. He likes to get picked off base. So
he's aggressive.
Yeah, he is aggressive.
He's an aggressive base runner. I think he's an aggressive baseball player. Like, he's an aggressive hitter. He chases a lot of pitches. He's aggressive trying to catch pop flies, all that stuff. He's aggressive on the bases. We saw in spring training that he was aggressive even with his arm, like in where he was throwing the ball, like trying to gun guys out at the plate when he had no chance. He's aggressive as a ball player, and he exaggerates a little bit when he's talking to the media. Just pointing it out, just putting another, you know, category in that bin, putting it in safe harbor. That's all I'm doing. Twitter admin for the Houston Astros. They don't have any feel. I don't know if it's the same person. I have no clue. And, hey, Astros win all this great stuff. And, look, Josh Hader yesterday had his 200th save in his career by picking up the save. And I get that the Astros, they have to post a graphic and, hey, Hader, 200 career saves. But here's the lack of feel that they have. The caption or the tweet for this graphic, it said, legendary start to the season. Okay, can we come up with something better? Like, congratulations, Hader, on 200 career saves. Like maybe talk about the milestone. But Hader, yes, he got it done. But Josh Hader had a very stressful ninth inning. I wouldn't call that a legendary start to the season. You lack vibe here. You lack feel by tweeting out legendary start to the season. Let's just say, hey, congratulations, Josh, 200 career saves, yes. Let's not say legendary start of the season. Have some feel here, admin. Come on.
Yeah, maybe legendary start to his career. If you just want to, let's put the onus on the 200 saves, not what happened in save 200. The phrasing there is definitely a little bit off because he did not look legendary against the Mets lineup in the ninth inning.
No. All right, 713-780 ESPN. Oh boy. Right field is much more difficult to play in that park, J-Dog. Yeah, right field is more difficult to play. There's more ground to cover, and you need a stronger arm. I agree with that. Hopefully I didn't say anything that contradicts that. Altuve drops in spring training, cement his spot as Astros' best outfielder. Careful, J-Bone, we don't mention family on this program. Oh, my bad. It could be a language barrier thing as well, giving him the benefit. Yeah, that's probably true. Ha, ha, ha. It was his way of thanking the fans. I know it was, but he exaggerated. Like, both things are true here. He's thanking the fans, but it's also an exaggeration.
He's a good hype man. He's hyping up Jeremy Pena, putting superstar status on him. He's hyping up people in the Crawford boxes. Yeah. He's a hype man.
He's an exaggerator is what he is.
Put a clock around his neck and call him Flav.
That's a terrible joke. The texters are talking about the moments in Jose Altuve's career that are better. How about making the team? That's a good call. How about when he hit the cycle?
Sure.
That's a good call. He's 34, so if he's had 100 better days, this day is still in the top 0.008% of his top days. All right. I'm 6 foot and Altuve's a bigger man than me on the baseball field. That is true. How big a guy are you? We won the first game. I was there. Hader choked bad. Branham didn't get the memo about the phrase calling a spade. It's on the offensive list now, sir. LOL. Is it? I'll have to look into that.
Well, we can't say calling a spade?
I guess not. I'll have to Google that.
I say that as I say that. But
appreciate the heads
we'll
up, though, Texter. I'll look into it. Ocho B-Max mispronunciation of Altuve's name was worse than Gus Johnson's Altuve. I don't remember Gus Johnson's Altuve, do y'all?
Yeah, when did Gus Johnson call an Astros game? I've never heard him call baseball.
Oh, maybe he did it in a read. I bet that's what happened. I bet you he did it in a Fox read.
Yeah, he's probably doing a game, a college football game on Fox, and there was a read for the Saturday baseball. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right. 713-780-ESPN. From Gus Johnson to Chancellor Johnson. Chancellor Johnson been covering the Cougars for really all season long. Writing for Kron.com currently. You have to be careful how you say that. We'll talk to Chancellor Johnson about the Cougs coming up next. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.